Welcome to The Whole View. I'm Stacey Toth of RealEverything.com. I'm all about loving the skin you're in and being healthy inside and out.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I believe that scientific literacy is the key to improving public health.
Welcome back to The Whole View. I am excited because it's one of those selfish shows. You may have remembered, if you listened to the prior podcast, that I mentioned how great I feel when I eat some oats. Now, I say some oats because it's not like I'm having them at every meal.
You're not eating all the oats.
And I have found particular high-quality oats, so I'm going to use a little asterisk there and then come back to it, are what don't just okay with me, but like I feel good and I feel sustained and I have healthy digestion and like all that kind of stuff. That's how I'm defining good. And so for me, it was the magic of finding not just gluten-free oats, but glyphosate-free oats. And I don't know that that is something that everybody needs or whatever. I think if you can find it, great. I don't want to stress everybody out about what you may or may not have been eating. It's the same kind of thing with rice, right? Like there's this idyllic version of it. And then there's like the, you know, don't stress yourself out. Do the best you can until you can do better kind of thing. But that's personally been my approach. And what I thought was interesting, Sarah, is you were like, let's maybe dive into this a little bit more instead of just having a soundbite. And then we do have questions around this topic because for years we talked about grains as being something that was problematic for digestion and proper absorption of nutrients and gut health and things like that. And so I do think it's a great thing to kind of revisit in general, just as a reminder about how we approach food and with a scientific mindset and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think to me, this is a really interesting topic, given that both of our health journeys included a sort of path through the paleo diet, right? And sort of to the other side, where you and I are both very open to experimenting with foods that we kind of maligned for a long time. And now we're like, no, I'm going to try this. And for me, of course, that journey includes really sort of revisiting the science on these foods and trying to get away from this idea of, first of all, grouping, right? So like throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but with foods, right? So if one food in this food family is overall not great for people, am I going to then avoid everything in this food family? Versus like really just let's look at the pros and cons of this individual food. Let's look at how it could fit into a overall healthy diet, right? So rather than looking at this one food as being good or bad, can we look at the overall nutritional quality of the diet and see if there's room for this food in that diet? And then really help empower people to experiment with foods. And so we have a really awesome question from a listener named Anna or Anna. It could be Anna. And I'm excited to dig in because I think she's set up this topic just perfectly.
We're going to end up talking about a brand that we truly love and use ourselves. And I purchased mine from Thrive Market. I don't know, Sarah, is that where you get yours from as well?
So I am a Thrive Market junkie, I think is the appropriate term. And I didn't realize that they carry that brand. So I'm going to have to add it to my regular aisle as Thrive Market calls it online. So once you've purchased something, there's a spot where you can just go and look at things that you've purchased before and keep it really simple. Like I have certain like regular products that I get every single time I order from them, which is almost, I really should just do subscribe and save. They have that too. They have all the cool things.
I recently signed up, I think like 3 months ago, for subscribe and save because there's items that we use over and over again that are easiest and most affordable from there to just be delivered to my doorstep. And the gluten-free, glyphosate-free oats that are also sprouted from there. There's One Degree, and then they also have kind of their own branded stuff as well. So we'll put a link in the show notes for you, because they happen to be doing kind of like a summer thing right now. If you're listening to this show in June, then it's $20 off your first order of $49, plus you get a free purchase when you join. And I will say that, like, in our house, sometimes we like stop using one account and start using another account in order to jump in on some other deals. You know, sneaky. Like Matt has an account and I have an account. So just a little elbow. I'm giving you one of those like social distance high fives and a wink, wink nudge, right nudge. Now. But I wanted to mention that because I think sometimes it feels overwhelming when you hear something as bougie as like, you know, sprouted, glyphosate-free, gluten-free oats. But it's truly accessible, I promise. You can get it from your local store. You can get it from Thrive Market. And Sarah and I both shop and love there. So I wanted to mention before we move on.
Sweet. So Anna knows how to get her question on the podcast, because this is how her question starts. First off, I adore you both. I feel you are my best friends and just don't know it yet. I want to eat raw heads of lettuce. I've done this for years and get angry about poorly conducted research with Sarah and go lift heavy weights while discussing clean beauty with Stacey. I can't get enough of you guys.
I feel like she knows us so well.
I know. I know. I totally feel it. So my question is related to oats. Because my diet has been restrictive for so long while I've tried to heal my digestive system after being diagnosed with celiac 3 years ago, I've now developed anaphylactic responses to a lot of paleo foods. I was really happy this month when I was successfully able to reintroduce rice and oats, finding them to actually feel calming on my stomach. Because my list of paleo foods that I am reacting to keeps growing longer the more I rely on them, I am finding myself turning to these other foods like legumes, rice, and oats on a daily basis in order to simply get enough food in. While I seem to tolerate it, it makes me nervous that I may be doing long-term damage. I know you've discussed briefly how rice and some beans are actually not bad for the gut, but that was still always with the caveat of them being eaten occasionally, and I don't think I've heard you discuss oats much at all. Could you perhaps address the effect of gluten-free oats on the microbiome, as well as the overarching effects of a diet that includes a lot of these non-paleo foods, but in the context of an otherwise veggie and fruit-rich diet with only healthy fats, high-quality meat and organ meats, and no refined sugars? Thank you. I love you both, and I am so thankful for all you do, Anna.
Okay, so first of all, I have so many feels with this question. At first, I was taken on this journey of like my own personal guilt of feeding into the dogma that is the glorification of paleo foods and the demonization. That's the one.
Although I think demonification should be a new word that we use all the time.
Of non, and I'm using quotation marks, right? Like paleo foods. And I say quotation marks because who you ask what a paleo food is will vary from person to person to person anyway. And so I'm a little mortified that this poor woman, Anna, I want to give you a hug. I don't even hug people and just be like, you're having anaphylactic reactions and digestive distress from these foods. Like, those aren't the foods for you. And it's okay to let them go. And I'm so glad that we've moved into this and embraced this idea of the whole view of really empowering people with the information that they need to make the decisions that are best for them, rooted in science, whether that's, you know, from scientific literature about, you know, a myriad of things, including gut health and all the different things that we talk about, nutrient density, blah, blah, blah. But also the freedom to just know that if something feels right to you, then, and you feel good in your own skin, like there is something magical to that, that I really want to empower everybody to do kind of what Anna's doing, which is leaning into the things that help her feel good. Because it's not like she's saying the only things that feel good are chicken nuggets and mac and cheese, right? Like she's talking about like Clearly, she's putting thought into how to nourish her body, and that's what we want everybody to do. So, I don't know. I don't know how you felt about that, but part of me was like on that, like, oh, and then I was like, you know what? No, she's learning. Look at her applying all these things and all these words, and Anna, you're so great. High five, but also I'm so sorry.
I agree, and it's one of the reasons why I really kind of wanted to lean in on this is because I think you and I both for many years, even if we, you know, we were always grounded in the science, but we also, I think, were so bought into the paleo framework that there were certain foods that we didn't really critically evaluate, right? We just kind of lumped them in, and oats are one of them, right? Lump it in with wheat and other grains. And I think that it's really, to me, it's really empowering to be sort of through this other side of this journey where I'm not intimidated by diet dogma or the people who are going to be, you know, waving their fists in the air and saying, well, how dare you call yourself paleo? And instead I'm like, I want to lean into like, let's just look at this food and decide based on science, you know, what are the pros? What are the cons? Who is this going to work for? Who might it not work for? What kind of quality might make a difference? And then give Anna the tools to really like experiment and figure it out. And I think that do you remember, Stacey? I can't remember what book tour we were on. We had dinner, I think it was in Philadelphia. And the waitress basically said something like, this was so many years ago. I used to be paleo, but now I eat rice sometimes. And I remember even at the time really having a hard time with the idea that the paleo diet was constructed so rigidly that even though there was this concept of an 80-20 rule always, right, there was always sort of these gray area foods that this woman did not feel entitled to the term paleo because she sometimes ate a food that even actually a lot more people who identify as following a paleo diet eat now compared to back then. But it still wasn't that unusual of a food to eat on occasion because of how, you know, it's an easily digested, slow burning carbohydrate. It can be really helpful for athletes to have those kinds of foods in their diet. And I just kind of wanted to, as we're entering into this conversation about oats and acknowledging that we're trying to take a step away from a dogmatic framework when it comes to nutrition, I also want to let Anna know that if she still identifies with the term paleo diet, that there's also nothing wrong with that. I think I'm at a point now where I feel like the term that I best resonate with is Nutrivore, but I also recognize that my diet looks a lot now, still looks a lot like it did when I would have called my diet the paleo diet. So I think it's okay to take steps kind of beyond in our health journey and still identify with that term. And I think it's okay to also move on if that's what, you know, Anna wants to do.
I would say it's also okay if we just don't want to put labels on things and we just eat what we find works for us at that time, because what works today might not work 2 years from now either. And it sounds like Anna's definition might simply be gluten-free because she's celiac. And like beyond that, we make choices, period. There's no like good, bad. There's no, you know what I mean? There's all this stuff. So I think that the idea of wanting a name for something that defines us, whether it's food or not, is inherent to the human psyche. And I love the concept of Nutrivore because it's focusing on nutrients. It's not focusing on demonizing or creating dogma or all of that kind of stuff. Rather, it's focusing on like, hey, let's make sure that we're giving ourselves nutrients. Like that's the point, right?
For sure.
But for me, I think the more I am immersed in this education on the hold that diet culture has on us, the more I want to like eschew all of these diets. And I'm using the like proper term diet, not just referring to how we eat, right? But the labeling, because I feel like it just moves into this category of selling things and capitalizing on something that really is all rooted in diet culture. And so I love that we're going to answer Anna's question from the perspective of health benefits of oats and why some people do or why some people wouldn't do well with oats, but not, we're not here to tell you like, is it good? Is it bad? Is it part of a label? Is it not part of a label? Or do you know what I mean? I just, it's right. Like make the choice to eat the foods that you want to eat, either because they fulfill you emotionally or they fulfill you, in Anna's case, actually satiating from the dietary limitations that she has, and she feels good eating them. And I love that that's kind of where we're going with food philosophy, because I think it's a powerful one. So that said, what are the health benefits of oats other than just, honestly, I don't even know. I know they have fiber. So maybe, yep. Maybe you could help me with some other knowledge.
Well, I guess big picture, the most important sort of like top line things to know about oats is that they have been very well studied for at least 30 years. And they have some really like well-established health benefits, mostly associated with cardiovascular disease, especially coronary heart disease, diabetes, blood pressure, so risk factor for cardiovascular disease. And they've also been shown to have a really high satiety index and be very, very helpful for weight management, because they're filling and they're slow digesting and they keep you full for a long time. And it's actually like there's a huge body of scientific literature showing these benefits. They're mostly attributed to the fact that they have, it's not just that oats are high fiber, it's that they have a very special type of soluble fiber that has a lot of functional properties. So it has a bunch of health benefits. But before we kind of like dive into all of those benefits of the beta-glucan fiber in oats, I think it's kind of important to also address why some people don't do well with oats. And traditionally in the paleo community, we sort of blame the fact that oats are a grain and they contain a prolamin-type lectin called avenin. And that's the same like chemical class as gluten. And even early research into celiac disease put oats into the same like category as wheat because of the similarity between avenin and gluten. So even, you know, if you look at the research, even up to a few years ago, oats were sort of on this list of, you know, celiacs shouldn't eat this food because of this very similar protein. But it's actually really interesting because when you start to dive into the details, you start to see some really distinct differences. So gluten, we know the effects of it really well. And part of that is because it's not very compatible with our digestive enzymes. So it is broken up into really predictable peptides. And those peptides have biological activity, including sort of being inflammatory and increasing intestinal permeability. And there's even studies showing that they get into the body and bind with receptors in the liver and in adipocytes, which are fat cells, and actually may be driving signals that are contributing to weight gain and obesity as a, you know, reaction to gluten. And so oats are getting sort of lumped in with wheat as being problematic because of the similarity, but there's some really key differences between avenin and gluten. So one of the key differences is just a concentration factor. So avenins are about 10 to 15% of total protein in oats, compared to gluten being 80 to 85% of the total protein in wheat. But also there have been a bunch of studies showing that avenins don't seem to trigger the same type of immune responses, even in people with celiac disease. And it turns out that, you know, one of the problems with gluten is that it's not very compatible with our digestive enzymes. And so it's broken apart into these biological molecules. But avenin is actually very sensitive to digestion. It is digested nearly completely. And our main protein digesting enzymes, pepsin, trypsin, and chymotrypsin, are all able to sort of break it apart. And that means that it's not producing these sort of half-digested proteins that are biologically active molecules. And there have been some studies that have shown that avenin in a couple of cultivars of oats have a low frequency of cross-reactivity with gluten. But studies that have even in people with celiac, have shown that this appears to be only an issue for a very small minority of people. So unlike sort of gluten, where we look at something like 55% of the population having genes that predispose us to gluten sensitivity, that doesn't seem to be the case with oats. So the big challenge of like, why are oats problematic for so many people? It appears to be purely gluten contamination. So I did not realize this, Stacey, that oats can be labeled as the, like, you know, the top quality number one oats allows for the presence of up to 2% foreign material, which is almost always wheat and barley, because they're processed on the same equipment, they're grown in the same fields on rotation. So the contamination of oats with wheat and barley, which both contain gluten, is extremely high. Like, so high, when you buy regular, not labeled gluten-free oats, 2% of that might not be oats. So it looks like, you know, studies show that true, like, either gluten cross reactivity that's binding with oats, or a true oat sensitivity, is a fairly low frequency event. And for most people, the problem that they're having is actually the fact that oats generally are not a very clean crop.
I will say that I have noticed in the last probably 2 or 3 years that the gluten-free label on oat products are a lot easier to find. Mm-hmm. Like, years ago, I don't ever remember seeing, well, I mean, frankly, there wasn't like gluten-free much of anything years and years
ago. That's true.
Depends on how old we're calling ourselves. But I mean, even before, just 2 years, not 10 years, I don't remember seeing as much, but now even like name brand cereals have the gluten-free label. I think it's worth mentioning, just as a reminder for people, if you really are celiac, there is like a threshold of how much gluten is allowed for gluten-free products. And I find that, like I said, for me, when I feel good on something, I am buying a specific brand. This is not sponsored by anyone, but I'll give an example. There's a brand called One Degree, and
that's my favorite.
Yes. And then Thrive Market is actually, I think they might be using those same brand. You know what I mean? How they like mm-hmm. use the same companies. They make cereals that are like the One Degree cereals. So One Degree makes not just the oats, but they also make like oat cereals that are O's. If you know what I'm talking about, that are made
they're
with like
O's.
They're oat
O's. I wonder
O's.
That make me feel cheery.
Yes. And not at all like you might have been cross-contaminated with something. So anyway, those I do well with, but I have tried the name brand gluten-free products, especially with kiddo here. We tried to bring about foods of their childhood memories, just like we try to do with our own children. And those include a lot of boxed foods. And so we have tried to find things that fit some standards, and those, they don't make me feel the same kind of good, even though they're made with oats and even though they have a gluten-free label. Now, it might just be because, you know, a higher sugar content or what, you know what I mean? There's a myriad of things, but I'll give that example that those two particular ones or brands are the ones that I lean on most, because the One Degree is glyphosate free and sprouted, which mm-hmm. Matt requests, by the way, a sprouted show. He says we've never done one before other than the nut one. So there you go. Added to our list. But I think we've mentioned it, you know, like why sprouting is helpful for digestion, but we haven't done like a deep dive into it. So anyway, I wanted to share that as an example that, yes, the regular name brand oat products will have that allowance for gluten, but even if they have the gluten-free label, that certification process in and of itself does have a threshold for allowance that might be too high for some people who are very sensitive.
It's 20 parts per million, which I only know because it's in my notes later on. But there are a number of celiac disease researchers and experts who believe that's probably about 4 times too high for celiac disease. So you could imagine something getting that gluten-free label because it's just under 20 parts per million, but that's actually too much gluten for somebody with celiac, or even a wheat allergy could potentially still have a reaction to that product. So that's one of the, you know, labeling conundrums, because it's we probably need it to be more like 5 parts per million to actually be safe for people with celiac. And there's lots of really good resources online if you do have celiac, where people sort of share their experience with gluten-free labeled products and whether or not that caused symptoms. And so there are lots of good sort of message boards and volunteer sort of agencies that are trying to keep track so that you can track down whether or not a product that's labeled as gluten-free really is low enough gluten to be safe.
Cool. So what about if it's good for you, is that worth it? Is that, you know, what's the score? what's the nutrient score?
So, I haven't talked about this very much on the podcast, but, one of the things that I am developing as I'm building Nutrivore is a way of sort of quantifying the nutrient density of foods and trying to do it in as unbiased a manner as possible and really just represent the nutrients per calorie in a food, which is what nutrient density is. And oats in terms of grains are one of the best. The only grains that actually score higher are corn and buckwheat. But in terms of like all foods, if you look at, you know, vegetables or fruit or even legumes, I mean, all grains are kind of meh in terms of nutrient density. So a 100 gram serving, it's about 2/3 of a cup of oats. It has a moderate glycemic load of 37. This means it's a pretty slow burning carbohydrate. But it has fairly high calories, 389 calories. For those calories, you get a whopping huge amount of manganese, like 246% of the daily value. You get 40 to 50% of the daily value for vitamin B1 and magnesium and phosphorus. And you get 20 to 30% of the daily value of iron, copper, and zinc. So you are getting a lot of nutrition. It's just that they're pretty energy dense food. So when you look at nutrition per calorie, it overall is sort of underwhelming. It's not too shabby. It's not awesome. What that really means in practice is oats, you know, basically shouldn't be a foundation. I use the word should. Oats are not the best choice for a foundational food, right? So a food that your entire meal is sort of built around. But in the context of, you know, what Anna's talking about, a diet that includes lots of fruits and vegetables and high quality meat, including snout to tail, like in the context of that type of diet, oats absolutely can fit in and still, you know, provide some valuable nutrition and not lower the quality of the entire diet to a point where we're not meeting nutritional needs. So provided, right, it's not a meal completely built around oats, or even if it is, right, porridge for breakfast, that the rest of the diet of that day is sort of abundant in these much more nutrient dense foods, that overall is going to be, you know, still a Nutrivore diet.
I think what's interesting for me, or at least the approach that I take or think about when I'm adding, let's just say grains back to my diet. Legumes and corn do not work for me, but that's me personally, right? Like mm-hmm. This is part of the journey, is figuring out what works for individuals. So for example, if I'm adding rice or oats to my plate, Or, oh, okay, something even, not even a grain, like a cassava noodle, right? Yeah. It's still a vegetable. I'm like using quotation marks because I have a hard time believing that. But it is, you know, it is a AIP-friendly starch. And I don't like look at my plate and just put some like ground meat in there and call that a meal, right? Like I will say, okay, we need to add a whole bunch of vegetables either into the noodles or have a salad on the side or, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so I think when I think of how I eat oats, like if I'm eating a bowl of that cereal, which is not very common, but I have eaten the cereal, I really enjoy it with fruit in it. And that's another way for me to like, you know, I'll put a banana or I'll put blueberries or whatever into the cereal itself. And also make sure that I usually have like a hard boiled egg or something else for protein. Or if I'm if I'm making like actual oatmeal, one of my favorite ways to do it is with canned pumpkin. Or if you have like frozen, you know, from ye last year in your freezer, because right now it's summertime, so we probably don't have fresh pumpkin around, but I usually, you know, bake a bunch and then I freeze it or, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But I mix in mashed pumpkin to the oats, and then I'll put like cranberries or raisins or different kinds of things in with it. And I, you know, for me, that's because I think of the oats as being the fiber, right? Like you've heard me talk before about the way I categorize food in my brain is fiber, protein and fats. And I try not to use the word carb because it's very triggering for me. And so I'm like, okay, I know that the oats are a really great fiber source for me and I feel good on it. Like, where am I getting my protein and where am I getting my fruits and vegetables? And I think that kind of delivers on this idea of it not being a nutrient-dense food. Like, I never would have thought, I would have been shocked if you told me that oats is a nutrient-dense food, but that's not what most of us are eating it for. We're eating it to kind of fill in. And to Anna's point, the question is, you know, how much is too much, I think is really the question. And that's not for us to decide. That's an individual. We can't presume to know, you know, people's health needs. We're not medical professionals, but I think the point here is, you know, you can't just sit down and eat oats only. You have to be mindful of the fact that, you know, you have a lot of other nutrient holes that you need to fill.
For sure. And I think that the way that you're thinking about oats is 100% on point because it is a very dense source of fiber. So that same 100 gram serving that delivers like a huge amount of manganese and a few other vitamins and minerals, but not really a ton of like essential vitamins and minerals per calorie, actually contains almost half of your daily value of fiber. It's like 10.6 grams in that 100 gram serving. And that fiber is also not fiber that's easy to get from other foods. It's a specific type of fiber called mixed linkage beta-glucan. And oats contain like 3 to 7% by weight, this particular type of beneficial fiber called beta-glucan. I said beta-glucan, didn't I? Beta-glucan. It's a different word. Let's make sure we're abundantly clear on that one. And beta-glucans, I'm now going to be super like hyper aware every time I say that word that I'm not mispronouncing it, are like gut microbiome magic. So they are very, very important for Bifidobacterium and Lactobacillus, are like best established probiotic bacteria. And the beta-glucans in oats are better than the beta-glucans in other grains. So there was one study that basically did either an oat supplemented diet, a barley supplemented diet, or a wheat supplemented diet, and normalized for the amount of beta-glucan fiber and found that the Bifidobacterium levels were highest with the oats. So it's not even just that it has this high, you know, concentration of beta-glucans. It's like also the best beta-glucans. And it looks like all of the functional properties of oats that are so linked with health benefits are because of this type of fiber. The only other food that really has this type of fiber in high concentrations is mushrooms. And we're still getting so much more from oats. It's one of the reasons why oats really stands apart from all other grains because of this particular type of fiber. So it's been shown to contribute to the maintenance of normal blood cholesterol levels. And it does this by binding to bile acids in the digestive tract and stopping. So bile acids are a cholesterol-based molecule and stops them from being reabsorbed. So it breaks a type of sort of recycling that the body normally has called enterohepatic recirculation, and increases basically the excretion of cholesterol by stopping as much bile acids from being recycled as normal. And so it's really, really effective at doing that. And that also may aid in some other types of detoxification. So we think about fiber types that are really important for detoxification are those that bind up toxins in the GI tract and allow and sort of facilitate their elimination instead of reabsorption. There have been studies showing...
We need to pause on that, because you know how I feel about toxins. So I'm like, mm-hmm. I love this image, and I want to make sure I fully understand it.
Do you love the image of poop being full of toxins because you ate the right kinds of fiber?
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing the word poop into the conversation.
It needed to be here.
It's been a while since I've, you know, gotten super uncomfortable. So thanks for that.
You're welcome.
No, so I mentioned early on, and I think a lot of people would agree, that one of the reasons that I feel great with oats is because I digest them very well. And so all of this makes a lot of sense to me. Like all of it, I'm like, mm-hmm, check the box. Mm-hmm, great, great, great. Especially because I have a difficult time with breakfast because I don't have a gallbladder, right? We've talked about this endless times. But what I didn't kind of get that foods do, and it makes sense now that you're explaining it to me, but it's one of those aha moments for me, is that not just is the liver filtering and doing all that kinds of stuff, but certain kinds of foods and the fibers that they are would kind of act like a magnet to those toxins, is what mm-hmm. it's sounding like, right? And that they're kind of attracting them and pulling them out of your body in ways other than some of the other ways that we've talked about on the show, like sweating or your lymphatic system and different kind. You know what I mean? Like, I love this idea that your body has so many ways to get rid of toxins, and poop makes sense. It's, you know, you're getting rid of stuff, but I hadn't really thought about food being a way to do that. So I wanted to kind of like emphasize something that you said, which was a little light bulb moment for me.
I'm so excited to have contributed to a light bulb moment.
How many times have we talked about the microbiome? No, I get that. I'm not saying that I wasn't
different than
attention.
The microbiome. Yeah, totally. This is a different mechanism. And actually, I'm going to expand on this idea of certain fiber types binding with fat soluble toxins in the GI tract. And that's because, so the liver, when it is detoxifying, it kind of has, depending on what it's detoxifying, there's sort of two different pathways to excretion. So water-soluble sort of end products basically go to the kidneys and then get peed out. And then fat-soluble detoxification products end up going to the gallbladder so that when we eat, it is secreted as that bolus when we eat into the small intestine. And those are the particular sort of fat-soluble sort of toxic metabolites from the liver. The liver's trying to get rid of these things, can be reabsorbed if we eat a low fiber diet. So those are the ones in particular that are binding with these special types of fiber that are really good at binding sort of fat-based molecules and helping to eliminate them. But this also extends to hormone excess. So in our enterohepatic recirculation, estrogen, for example, also goes through this recirculation. So it's kind of getting eliminated and then reabsorbed. And so a high fiber diet with especially these types of fiber types in them can also be really helpful for hormone regulation in addition to detoxification.
And that also helps with the picture that I've been painted so many times of a low fat diet is better for the gallbladder, when really the answer, it sounds like, I wish somebody would have explained to me, is a high quality fiber would have been helpful. And also why people who don't have a gallbladder anymore are more likely to have liver issues, because you don't have that additional support to kind of offset. So all of this is making so much sense to me, full picture, and I appreciate this little bullet on pages of notes as being something I'm like, oh, I really get this one and I like it.
Sweet. So other great things that beta glucans do, in part, they're very good at helping to regulate bowel movements by increasing fecal bulk, which actually makes bowel movements easier to pass. So that is a great thing, because we started talking about poop, might as well just go all in. And then the other thing that it's been shown is that it can help to regulate blood sugar levels. So because of this very high fiber concentration, the starchy carbohydrates in oats are absorbed very, very slowly into the bloodstream. And so because of that, it's helping to regulate blood sugar levels, even if those oats are sort of part of a full meal and not the dominant part of the meal. And that has been shown to basically be really a really helpful slow-burning carbohydrate source for diabetics, for metabolic syndrome, for cardiovascular disease risk, because of its sort of dual impact on helping to regulate blood sugar levels as well as helping to reduce cholesterol.
Cool. So what else in terms of, you know, we've talked about the fiber and all of that kind of stuff. I'm wondering, like, what else is in oats? Is there, I'm assuming, not very much, and a non-irritating type. But, for example, a protein is often what people would have a reaction to, like an allergic reaction. So does it have a protein, and is it an allergen? I haven't seen it listed in, like, the top allergens.
Yeah, it's I mean, oat allergy is certainly possible, but it's not a very common allergy. And this is really interesting. We did a show, we'll have to pull the number because I don't remember it offhand, about basically plant protein not being super digestible, generally not being a complete protein, and sort of like, you know, plant foods are great. Obviously, we super endorse eating all the veggies all the time. But generally, we don't think of them as a protein source. But oat protein is about 90% digestible. So if you compare that to something like beef, which is 95%, like something like collagen or egg, which would be like 98, 99%, like that's a really high digestibility protein. And oats are about 15 to 20% protein by weight. It's mostly a type of protein called globulins, which also may be doing some actually have some beneficial biological activity that are helping to like reduce inflammation, for example. So there's this whole, like oats really do kind of, again, sort of, they're in their, a class of their own. Like we really need to stop thinking of them as a grain and just think of them as oats, like a special family just for oats, because they're so fantastic. The starch is 100% digestible. It is, and it's slow burning because of the high amount of fiber. It also has some fats in it. So it's about 7% fats, but some varieties, it sort of depends on the variety, can be up to about 18%. And one of the most dominant fats is oleic acid. So generally, oats don't have a very favorable omega-6 to omega-3 fatty acid ratio. However, they do have oleic acid, which is this heart-healthy monounsaturated fat. And so that can be really helpful as well. One of the things that I thought was really interesting as I was sort of pulling together research for this is that oats also sort of naturally include enzymes, including lipases, which help to break down fats. But because that can cause oats to go rancid in storage, they're typically subjected to this high temperature treatment for conventional oats, which is called kilning, as in like a pottery kiln, but it would be an oat kiln. So not as fun, obviously, as pottery. And that actually helps to dramatically increase the storage life. But it's also why sprouting oats at home can be so tough, because it's really hard to buy whole oat groats that are unkilned. So that's, again, why finding a company like One Degree that sprouts oats before you buy them can be so helpful.
And is also gluten-free. I'm assuming that they're not cross equipment-ing. That's a wrong term. Wow, I'm killing it today. you know what I'm talking about. But also, the fact that the oats are glyphosate-free and are sprouted, like, I haven't seen any other brand. Maybe it's out there, but I haven't seen any other brand like that. And it truly does make a difference
for sure
for me, like in how my body reacts to it.
It's actually the only type of oats that I can eat without getting a stomach ache. So if I eat just regular gluten-free oats, if it's more than, you know, a small amount, I'll get a stomach ache. And the sprouted glyphosate-free oats from One Degree are the only kind that I can kind of eat on a daily basis and not have any kind of symptoms as a result.
I know that it sounds like it's turning into a giant commercial, but it's really not. It's just these are the brands that we love that we share with you, whether it's sponsored or not. And I will say, have you tried their box cereals? Have the girls tried their box cereals?
So funnily enough, I bought some the last time I was in the store, but they're hidden at the back of the pantry for a special treat that has not yet occurred. So because that's the type of thing that we would, I don't know, you know, when like there's a really bad day going around and you pull out the special box and you like go, here's a fun snack. And everyone goes, yay, my day's not bad anymore. It's great. that's kind of what we're waiting for.
They're but great I have to tried... travel with too, because we can take like a box of pantry almond milk and cereal. And like, if you get a hotel that just has a mini fridge, or we have a cooler that plugs into the car, like it's nice to know that we have an option on the road and we don't have to buy meals at every place. Like camping, it would be great for different things like that. And so I just wanted to say, like, it's not just like the oats themselves, which I personally love to make like stovetop oatmeal. It's very comforting to me to like see it come together and then to eat
it. I like their steel cut oats and making like steel cut oats in the Instant Pot. That's my favorite, because it's like hands off. You just put in yeah, it's like 2 cups of oats, 5 cups of water. I don't know, there's something about
like stirring oats with a wooden spoon and seeing it thicken that is like, it's like calming for me. I don't know.
But it's like 25 minutes with steel cut oats. It's 25 minutes of calming that I don't need.
But you don't need to stir it the whole time. Anyway, I wanted to mention that they do sell other products with those high quality oats. So
also, they're a Canadian company. I'm just throwing that out there.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that.
Yay, Canada.
We'll put links in the show notes. I've found them on Thrive. I found them on Amazon. I found them in Costco. Like,
my Whole Foods carries them. My Little Sprouts carries them.
So, yeah. Anyway, okay.
Let's talk about Sprouted though. Matt, this is not the whole Sprouted show that I know that you want us to do, but I do think it's important to kind of talk about, since we've both mentioned that this particular high quality sprouted oats is what works the best for us. I think it's sort of helpful to kind of talk about what happens in sprouting. So what sprouting basically means is the seed is trying to turn itself into a plant. And with oats, that's really hard to do in your home, right? With legumes, right? Dried bean type legumes, it's a little bit easier. You kind of soak them for 24 hours, depending on the size of the beans. You can put them in a sprouting jar. And as soon as you start to see little signs of life, right, then you know that a lot of enzymatic activity has happened that starts to convert basically things that we traditionally think of as anti-nutrients and liberates a lot of minerals, but it also starts forming more vitamins. And it's because the seed is basically going through all of the biochemistry to become a plant. And so functionally, what we see, not with nuts, as we've covered on the show before, but with grains and legumes, we see a higher availability of minerals, especially phosphorus, potassium, magnesium, calcium, and zinc. We see higher levels of a lot of B vitamins. It can even shift sort of the amount of protein. You can see a shift in the type of starches and fiber types, because those are storage molecules. And generally what you see is an increase, although sometimes it's, you know, not super dramatic, but especially for minerals, you see an increase in all of the minerals that are typically bound up with phytic acid through sprouting, and a complete reduction in phytates. And generally, you know, so you're increasing the digestibility by basically creating all of this biochemistry and enzymatic machinery that is starting to break down a lot of storage molecules in the seed in order to facilitate the growth of the sprout. And then you're also seeing this reduction in things that are more difficult to digest. And what's really fascinating to me about oats is it's not just that it's an increase in, right, calcium, magnesium, potassium, phosphorus. There's a small increase in iron. There's a slight increase in copper. There's an increase in some B vitamins, especially vitamin B2. But there's also a pretty dramatic increase in GABA, which is a neurotransmitter that is very calming. And I think this is one of the reasons why oats are such a comfort food. But when you sprout oats, the amount of GABA basically increases by like 4 to 5 times. And then the other thing that happens when you sprout oats is the amount of polyphenols goes up by about 2.5 times. So you've got these other functional compounds that are being concentrated in the sprouting. That is probably why, at least I think this is why I've noticed that I super tolerate sprouted oats. Again, it could be also the gluten-free status. It could also be the glyphosate freeness. Like, there's other things going on with these high quality oats than just the sprouting, but it really is a good argument for searching for sprouted oats if at all possible.
When you said that it contained GABA, all mm-hmm. I could think about was the Hulk, and I was like, oh, that's not calming. But I think it's a different kind of
isn't the Hulk gamma?
I think so.
I think it's gamma rays activated the super soldier serum.
Yeah.
It's gamma rays.
Where my mind was. Yeah.
Excellent. It's definitely in a different place than mine, but now I'm there too. So we can just live in MCU meets oats. We need to come up with
bet the Hulk eats oats. Let's say 100%.
For sure.
I'm standing by that.
Yeah. The giant bowl too.
Yeah. Okay. moving on from my distractions. I guess maybe one of the things that we could do is talk about the different kinds of mm-hmm. oats. I know you said steel cut. I'll confess, while we have steel cut oats, I often use, you know, rolled oats. I don't even think that you can make like a quick oat from 1 degree. I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think that 1 degree has quick oats. So the difference between, so rolled oats are literally like, they go through this like machine that rolls them flat. And quick oats are then chopped. So they're an even smaller flake. And that makes them sort of faster to soften into porridge, right? Or hot oatmeal cereal. And so I don't think that 1 degree does a quick oats. I think they only have what would be considered either thick rolled oats or old fashioned rolled oats. But it's really interesting. I'm glad you asked, because there are studies basically showing that the thick oat flakes, and it has to do with basically how easy it is to digest the like pre-chopped up oat flakes. Oats are generally not something that you're doing a ton of chewing of, because they're already really small and sort of easy to swallow. So the size of the oat flake actually makes a functional difference to the gut microbiome. And the thicker oat flakes seem to increase bifidobacterium even more and increase the amount of butyrate, which is a short chain fatty acid that's super beneficial, that are sort of an end production of bifidobacterium metabolism. Increases butyrate like 2.5 times more than thin oats. And that's probably because of a difference in the resistant starch content and then how that processing is changing the digestibility of the oats. And so steel cut, because they're even thicker, are slightly better. because they're not rolled first. They're just kind of chopped. And so they have slightly higher resistant starch, slightly higher beta glucans. They seem to be at least marginally better than old fashioned oats in terms of butyrate production, not statistically significant. So either of those is a great choice. I can certainly tell you that I have both old fashioned and steel cut oats in my house.
Agreed. We have them. It's just because they take longer. And that's why I was like, ooh, Instant Pot's a good idea.
Try the Instant Pot. It's super great.
Yeah.
I'll text you my, I don't remember. I think I do. It's like, I don't remember how long I do it for. I think I do it for like 8 minutes with a 20 minute, like warming time after the pressure cooker actually stops, but I'll look that up and we'll put the actual like directions into the show notes because I can't remember exactly. I haven't made them in like at least a month, which is kind of sad and obviously a situation that needs to be fixed.
We have a recipe for that pumpkin oatmeal that I was talking about as a mm-hmm. reel on Instagram. I'll put the link in the show notes because every time I make it, people are like, oh my gosh, how do you make that? And I'm like, you just put a can of pumpkin in with your oatmeal. But it's really good to sweeten it with molasses or maple mm-hmm. syrup, as we talked about before, as well as being sweeteners with actual nutrients. So anyway, okay, so let's say we're at a place where we're like, ooh, oats might work for me. How do I go about trying them out? Or in Anna's case, how does one go about testing how much is too much? Or is it, you know what I mean? Like, how does it feel good or not good or blah, blah. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
I mean, to answer the second part of the question first, I mean, Anna's already at a point where she knows that this food makes her feel good. So the question is basically like, look, you know, take a food journal, use an app that gives you vitamin and minerals and not just macronutrients, and see if you're hitting your nutrient targets for the day. And if you are and you feel good, you're great. I mean, like there's, if you look at the studies that look at isolated sort of beta glucan or look at oats with a normalized beta glucan content, 3 to 4 grams of beta glucan is sort of like that sweet spot for the functional benefits. And that is roughly what you would get depending on exactly what oats you have, from like 50 grams to 100 grams of oats, like a third of a cup to 2/3 of a cup. It's not a huge amount. I mean, it's a small bowl. And so that's enough to be getting all of those benefits. And if
Can I ask a your, question? Is yeah. that measurement before or after you add water? When you say like a cup of oats, like a cup of dry oats is, I don't know, what, 3 cups once it's done? Because you're adding 2 to 1 usually.
Oh, that's cooked. So like definitely, I think oats about double in volume when you cook them. So we're talking about like a third of a cup cooked would be like 2.5 tablespoons dry. So it's not.
Yeah. Okay. That makes much yeah, more yeah. sense to me.
But thank you for bringing my attention to that, because that is an important distinction, because you don't want to have to eat like oats are so filling. I can't imagine eating like 2/3 of a cup raw, yeah. which would be like.
And it's like the opposite of spinach, right? Like you can put 3 cups of spinach in a pan and then you're like, I now have 1 tablespoon.
Yes. I now have 1 bite of spinach. Yes, that's very, very true. So for Anna's case, I say just have a look at whether or not you're meeting nutrition targets. And if you feel good with how much you're eating, then awesome. For somebody who is progressing on their health journey and has listened to this and thought, you know what, I'm going to go and find a good quality oats and I'm definitely going to experiment with this. This is maybe something that I'm interested in adding back into my life. Standard, you know, elimination and reintroduction protocol is what I would recommend. For that to work, you need to have eliminated the food for at least 2 weeks, and 4 is better. And that is because if you're going to have a food sensitivity reaction, you're basically down regulating all of the different sort of protective mechanisms that are restraining the reaction, but testing the food while all of the mechanisms that are responsible for the reaction are still there. So you basically unmask a reaction that was always happening by taking away all of the mechanisms that constrain the reaction, but testing before the actual reaction itself starts to downregulate as well. So that's why when you do an elimination and challenge, it can feel like, oh my gosh, I've been eating this food for so long and I never reacted like this before. That whole point of the elimination and challenge diet is to magnify the reaction, so it's really easy to identify. So standard protocol, you want to pick a day to test where you're not sick, you're not, you know, super stressed, you're feeling well, you slept okay, there's nothing weird out of the ordinary. And then you want to consume it. If you're worried about an allergy, you would take a very small amount, wait 20 minutes, consume a little bit more, wait an hour, consume a little bit more. If you're not concerned about an allergy and you're really just looking for sensitivity type symptoms, which would be more like GI symptoms, mood effects, trouble sleeping, skin changes, then you could just go all in and just have a serving. If you're worried about an allergy as well, though, go a little bit at a time, because an allergy response can get really big really fast, and you definitely want to be able to stop as soon as any symptoms of a reaction start. And for sensitivity reactions, they can take up to, you know, 4 or 5 days to manifest. So you want to not add anything else into your diet over that 4 or 5 days while you sort of wait and see, have I been grumpier than normal? Have I been getting headaches? Has my sleep been disrupted? Do I have any GI symptoms, any skin symptoms? If you have chronic conditions that cause, you know, joint pain, right? Increase in symptoms, something like that. All of those can be a sign of a food sensitivity reaction. And if you're not sure, right? So I was fine on the day I tested it, but 2 days later when I had the headache, I didn't sleep well. I'm not sure if that's a reaction. Like, hold tight, give yourself a week or two to kind of reset and then try again and see if it happens again. Sometimes mild reactions can be really tough to identify, especially when we really are excited about a food and we really want it to work for us. It can be really easy to apply some denial to whatever side effects we're experiencing. And sometimes it's possible that you'll notice nothing on the challenge, but then you'll start to notice symptoms if you started to consume oats every day, for example. Or like one of the things that I told Stacey on a previous podcast is I think of oats as a sometimes food, and that's because the oat quality is so important. So I seem fine with 1-degree oats, and I get stomach ache with any other kind of oats. So I'm really, really careful about how often I eat them and what quality I have as a result. So also keep an eye out for, you know, maybe it's the quality of the oats, or maybe it's just a food that's okay as long as I eat them once a week. But if I'm going to eat them every day, it's going to have this like slow burn badness that's not going to be great.
I think in general, I just find that variety works well for me. I've like known people. I had a friend once who like had to have rice with every lunch and or dinner. Like they had to. And I remember them doing like a low carb thing and they were freaking out. It was the first time in their life they'd never had rice before. And I'm like touching my face when I say this, because I'm just like remembering the whole thing. And I think that my philosophy as a parent early on, you know, when the kids were babies, and you're introducing foods and, you know, developing a palate to where I am today with teens and myself and all that kind of stuff, is I just think that variety is really great. And the more science that we look at, the more that's being supported by, you know, the varieties of friends in our gut from the microbiome and, in, you know what I mean, all this stuff. And I put emphasis on things that I know the gut really likes, like mushrooms. I try to always make sure we're having at least twice a week, and seafood. I try to make sure that we're having that several times a week, whether it's, you know, in tuna that we're having for lunch, or in splurging and getting sushi, or most of the time we're just, you know, roasting or grilling or pan searing fish, or, you know, whatever the case may be. And I think that my approach to oats is the same. Even though I feel like, I'm thinking of myself standing over the pot, stirring, waiting for the oatmeal, and just being, like, really excited, and now I'm gonna go make oats, right? But it's not something that I'm doing every day, and maybe my body would feel good with that. I don't know, but that's just not how I eat, so I can't speak to that. Like, you know what I mean? I make oatmeal, I don't know, maybe once every 2 weeks. And it's a large batch because there's six of us. So, you know, we make a lot and we usually have it for breakfast maybe 2 or 3 days, depending on how many people are having leftovers or whatever. And then it's gone and, you know, we don't eat it for a while. And that works well for me because I don't have as many restrictions, for example, as Anna has, to then also include things like cassava or, you know, different kinds of starches that have fibers or, you know, are things that I look to fill my family's plate. And because I don't have those restrictions, I don't know what it would be like to have it all the time. And it's not something that I want either. Like, I don't find myself often craving oats. Like, now I want that comforting bowl of oatmeal, but it's not something like every day I'm like, oh, I wish I could have oatmeal, but I had it yesterday. No, that's not how my mind works.
Well, I think, I mean, to me, that brings back another sort of key property of a health promoting diet that we've talked about on the show approximately 6 million times, which is variety. So I think, you know, one of the things that's been really interesting to me as I build Nutrivore is thinking about foods in a much more nuanced way and not wanting to apply red light, green light, or yes, no, or, you know, any of these types of labels onto foods, and really instead think about what makes a healthy diet overall, right? And what, to me, right, identifying your own triggers, obviously super important, and understanding that not every food's going to work for every person. That's a really important piece of it. The other piece is nutrient sufficiency, right? Getting all of the nutrients that your body needs from food. But then there's this other piece, which is variety. There's been studies showing that, you know, eating 30 or more different plant foods in the week dramatically improves the gut microbiome compared to eating 10 or fewer. And if you look at the standard American diet, even if it's a varied diet, all of those different foods are made from the same, like, 5 or 6 different ingredients, right? It all sort of boils down to, it's all wheat and corn and soy and vegetable oil. And so it's, even though it looks like it's more varied than it is, when you actually look at how many different plants are being represented with those foods, it's not very many different plants. And so I think we do the same as we're expanding our diet and introducing some grains and some legumes. I'm still thinking about, you know, there's no food that's a daily food. There's no one thing. Okay, coffee. Coffee's daily. But there's no one food that I can say that I consume every single day, because variety is so baked into my food priorities that even when I find something that works really well for me, it works really well for me, and at most I'm going to eat it once a week.
Yep. Could not agree more. I do want to mention, I don't know if you know this, but I've been doing meal plans for free on the blog from recipes that are all free online, either from, you know, my website or things that are from friends' website or Pinterest or whatever. And one of the things that I'm doing in those meal plans is ensuring that there's 30 or more varieties of vegetables. The one I did last week was 41. The one I did this week is 42. It's a lot easier in the summer than winter, I'll tell you that, because it is seasonal. And there's also a variety of proteins and healthy fats. So every week there's at least, you know, some seafood, beef, pork, and chicken. Like, there's a variety of those things. So if you're feeling like, oh my gosh, I can't even, I have a free resource. You're welcome to go pull on the blog at any time. I publish it every Monday. It's called Meal Plan Monday. So it doesn't have, there's no oats in any of them, I don't think. Most of the time, maybe there's like pasta, like I said, because cassava pasta, because it's just dinners. But wanted to put that out there because you mentioned variety and we've talked about it before, and people felt really like overwhelmed when we talked about it on the show. But then I remember being like, oh, I actually counted and I got mostly there. And so I've just been more mindful and more intentional. And now I've gotten pretty good at like knowing as I put together a meal plan how to make adjustments and add more in, and it's more natural for me. So do the work for you.
It's awesome. So Stacey, as we wrap up the show, I did totally pull my steel cut oats recipe because I was like starting to second guess, like, what if I said something way off? And I totally did. So the recipe is 2 cups of steel cut oats to 5 to 6 cups of water. So if you like thicker porridge, 5 cups, if you like thinner porridge, 6 cups, I prefer 6 cups. That's the way I roll. And 1/2 teaspoon of salt. You can scale up or down. It's pretty flexible. And then in the Instant Pot, it is 4 minutes on high pressure, and then let the pressure naturally release for 15 minutes. Then stir. You can add whatever, you know, flavorings if you want to the whole thing, or not. But that is my go-to for steel cut oats in the Instant Pot. Otherwise, again, yeah, it's like 25 minutes on the stovetop, which for me feels like way too long for breakfast.
I'm going to try it, but how do you think it would work with like 1/2 almond milk, 1/2 water? Because I prefer that texture and flavor.
I think in the Instant Pot, it would work great.
It would work fine. It's not going to like.
Yeah, it's not going to scald because it's an Instant Pot.
Okay. And then I also like to put cinnamon in with the liquid because I feel like it infuses it into the better. Oats. Well, yeah, it's like it infuses into the oats versus just kind of like sitting on the surface if you mix it in at the end. And the other thing is cinnamon is really anti-inflammatory, and I try to add it as much as possible because I feel a difference when I do. So when I do oats, I try to, like, you know, I'm like the chemist, like putting as many different like anti-inflammatory different kinds of like things in there. Like, yeah, my digestion's gonna feel so good. My joints are gonna feel so good. I just gave you an alarming presentation of what I look like when I'm cooking. And if you could have seen my hand gestures, like it was even more embarrassing than it sounded.
Like evil. We're back to the MCU.
Yes. And I was like using beakers to pour things in. Okay. I'll experiment. I'll let you know how it goes. But
yeah, I would think that would be fine too. So what I typically do is I just make it straight, and then at the end I put in a little bit of ghee and a little bit of like maple syrup just to add a hint of sweetness. My kids don't know what sweet porridge is actually like, but I add just a little bit. And I'm usually really popular when I make it. Like it's kind of a special treat. Again, I feel like it's been too long, and obviously that is what this weekend's breakfast is going to entail.
And while it feels like a special treat, now we've just visited how you can feel good about eating that if it feels good to you. Like we don't need to have dogma around all the stuff. And there's lots of ways that that you can sweeten it without sweetener. Like I said, I usually put like raisins or cranberries in mine. Yeah. And if you get a bite of a piece of fruit, like if every bite has a piece of fruit, it completely changes the balance of like how something taste sweet or not or whatever. And then you're adding all kinds of extra nutrients and like all kinds of good stuff. To me, it's an everyday food, although we don't need it every day. It's not like a, oh, this is a special treat kind of thing. Usually my kids are like, oh yay, mom's making oatmeal, but it's not like, you know, they're bounding down the stairs the way they would if I made like pancakes or something. So
I feel like mine too. I am as popular when I make oatmeal as when I make pancakes.
I feel like spending some time with your kids would just really fill my soul with like the validation that I need of parenting, because my kids are really all in this phase where we've spent 1.5 years being quarantined together, and anything that anybody does is just eye roll, you know, it's all eye roll. So there's so many eyes being rolled in this house all the time with 4 teens and tweens. Like, it's just like, okay, I get it. You're 16 eyeballs, however many, 8 eyeballs. Like,
I'm going to say we have our fair share of eye rolls in this house. There was one eye roll the other day that I was like, did you see the back of your brain right there? That was intense. Like, it was all the eye roll, and I can't even remember what triggered it. Something really simple and normal that somehow triggered all of the teenage snark all in one eye roll.
All right, we're going to talk more about our children rolling their eyes at us over on Patreon. If you enjoy this show, free for you. This is a great way to support us, and we appreciate you being here. The best thing that you can do is share it with someone who you think might enjoy it and leave us a review. We will, as always, be back again next week, and we appreciate you submitting your questions and your comments, because it helps us come up with topics. And thanks to Anna for her wonderful question. We want to be your friend as well, and look forward to chatting soon. Oh gosh, that was awkward. You'd think we hadn't been doing this for 47 years.
No, it's all good. Anna or Anna, however you pronounce your name. Yeah, we're besties. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. Do you love the Whole View podcast? We'd love for you to leave us a review wherever you listen and share a podcast with your friends and family.
And did you know that you can now get exclusive behind-the-scenes content on Patreon for less than the price of an almond milk matcha a month? Your Patreon membership supports us and gets you access to a monthly bonus episode.
But not for kids' ears, because our bonus content is explicit. You can find us as The Whole View on Patreon for our real, unfiltered thoughts on this week's episode.